Mr. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop. With the chicken and the brisket and the marrow and the giblets, Mr. Cutlets, spend some time with me. I know it's crazy, but it's true. It's not worth eating if it lacks the greasy Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets.
Yes, that's me, Mr. Cutlets, Josh Ozersky, the author of Meet Me in Manhattan, The Hamburger History, etc., etc.
You don't want to list everything.
We're here at the Heritage Radio Network, and we are being sponsored today by A16 Restaurant in San Francisco, the former haunt of Nate Appleman, or Applebaum. Was it Appleman? Applebaum. Anyway, he ain't there no more. He's gone, but it lives on, and it's still a very fine restaurant, you should know. I'm here with my beautiful co-host, Stephanie Cohen.
Hello.
Ace newspaper reporter.
Thank you.
For one of our great tabloid newspapers here in New York.
Which will remain unnamed.
And we have another guest here today in Roberta's wonderful Italian restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Actually a native of Queens himself, although a longtime resident of Williamsburg, Mr. Andy Chernoff.
I'm not beautiful also? I'm totally
He's kind of cute.
Andy.
Thank you.
Andy.
Stephanie has manners.
Andy is a very interesting person because he is a musician who started the famous proto-punk band The Dictators, and was very much a sort of a elder statesman of the New York rock scene in the 70s.
I invented punk rock.
Invented punk rock, in fact.
As a matter of fact, they call me the Christopher Columbus of punk rock.
And now Andy is a certified sommelier and a wine professional.
That's so interesting. They're very divergent fields. Or are they not?
Actually, they aren't.
Oh.
And there are many, many people who were in the music business that are now in the wine business.
Why is that?
Why is that? The reason is...
Well, who are some of these people?
Yeah.
I can't think of any, but you.
David Bowler, who has a very major, one of the major distribution companies in New York,
okay.
Was a musician.
Is it because they are all drinkers?
Well, wait, no.
I think,
natural progression.
Also, didn't Jello Biafra start a label? Like, there's a bunch of wines that are from, like, small wine vineyards or whatever that are owned by former rock musicians or something.
The guy in Tool.
Tool.
Who? Maynard?
Maynard.
I love him.
He has a vineyard in Arizona of all
really?
Places.
Really?
Yeah. Very, very serious about, well,
to love
about
him.
Wine.
Cool.
And the reason is when you're a musician, you travel a lot. So I got into wine. I was always into food as a kid because my parents were always taking me out to
Jackson
weird.
Heights.
Grew up in Jackson. But this is before it became Indian and Latin. It was still Irish, Italian, Jewish. Hmm. But my parents would take me to the first Sichuan restaurant that opened up or some Indonesian food. They were very food oriented. So I always had an interest in food. And all of a sudden, I'm traveling, spending half my life in Europe. So you play a show. You go out to dinner. And I'm in Italy, Germany, Spain, France. And there's a bottle of wine on the table. What is that? What is that word on the label? I became curious, so I used to travel with a book, and it led to, the book led to a course, led to a, just kept, it never ended. I really had a passion.
Now, what's also interesting is that some of the good stories, Andy, by the way, has been, in recent weeks, been doing occasional shows at Lakeside Lounge where he does like a, almost like the, it's like Chernoff Unplugged. He tells stories and then plays acoustic versions of his great hits. And
he was the songwriter for The Dictators. He wrote all the song and the bass player.
Yeah. But I also
the guitar player.
I was the bass player. I was a songwriter, the bass player, but I also wrote songs for other people. Part of my income is songwriting.
What's the most famous song you've written? Will we know it?
No, I don't have any big hits.
Andy,
I've had songs in movies.
Don't
I've had
you know,
songs
Andy,
the Ramones.
Andy wrote I Will Always Love You.
I would feelings.
Wind beneath you. Wind beneath my wings. But Andy, what I was going to say is some of the good stories involve food. Like, didn't they throw White Castles at you at a show in...
Well, who would throw White Castles?
It was in New York. That was in New York.
Don't they want to eat it?
You know what? I think we... This was at Irving Plaza before it was called... The Fillmore. Now it's called the Fillmore. Mm-hmm. Then it was called Irving Plaza. It was New Year's Eve. And we bought a whole bunch of White Castles for the audience because we're gracious hosts. And it started a food fight. And now it's legendary.
What year was that?
Oh, this must have been the 80s, early 80s, I'm guessing.
No, and Andy, it's fascinating. Andy's show, you know, this is not exactly wine related, but it's so interesting that I thought I would bring it up anyway.
Please.
He was telling us that he, you know, he, like... You think of Jackson Heights, like what good, like they say, like in the Gospels, what good ever came out of Nazareth, you know?
Yes.
Or what good ever came out of Galilee? Andy's from Jackson Heights, apparently, like within six blocks of Jackson Heights, was like, tell them
who came out.
Well, yeah, that.
Okay. Other than you.
I went to elementary
school with Johnny Thunders. Who at the time was not a
just
junkie.
Explain who everyone is.
Johnny Thunders was in the New York Dolls, and he had the Heartbreakers, and he was really charismatic, very influential guitar player.
Okay,
who was a drug addict and would go on stage. People used to go to see him, like nodding out on stage.
But a truly legendary guitar player.
Fantastic, very influential, amazing looking guy. And my high school, I went to the band called the Flesh Tones, and like literally the next high school, Kiss went to, and the high school over was the Ramones and Fred Smith from television. We all went to high school around the same time.
Did you guys all know each other and influence each other?
I didn't know them then. Not in high school. After high school, I met people. But it was really in a maybe 5 square mile period area.
How funny.
It was good in the when he tells it at the show.
Yeah.
He says there was a guy named like Chaim Ben Pesach. Why was it? What?
Gene Simmons' real name is Chaim Klein.
And who's the other guy?
Paul Stanley's name is Stanley Eisen.
Right.
So
Chaim is Kiss. Wow.
Yeah, that's Kiss. Yeah.
That's funny.
Evil Jews.
evil Jews.
And yeah, so like obviously, you know, Andy has got a lot of stories from back then. And he talks about it, and you know, in subsequent segments, Stephanie, I obviously, you know, it'd be good to get him to talk. But I also am hoping that we're going to get Andy some useful wine advice, like maybe you know, this is a time of year when people want to get wine to bring to parties. They're invited to big events. Maybe they're having events, entertaining themselves. Not entertaining themselves in that sense. But I did that. I was a lonely child. I was often called upon to do that.
Thank you.
I don't mean in a bad way.
Okay.
But Spanish wines are your specialty, and I'm hoping you'll be able to give us some guidance in buying less expensive but very good wines, especially Spanish wines.
This is the thing. If you're at a party, it really doesn't make a difference. Because you're not concentrating on the wine. If you're sitting out down to dinner with a few friends and you've got some really good food in front of you, you're going to really get the subtleties out of the wine. When there's music, there's people talking, walking around, very, very difficult to get the true subtleties out of a good bottle of wine. But to answer your question, south of Spain in around Jumilla, Yecla, great, great buys. A lot of flavor for very, very little money, as well as south of Italy, Sicily, Apulia. Great, great buys in wine.
And there's also some of these other less well-known wine-producing regions these days have some pretty good wine coming out of it, right? There's like, there's some good wine coming out of South Africa, or no?
Personally?
You don't like it?
No.
Well, what about the Oregon places like that?
Oregon, great Pinot Noir. Great, great stuff.
Some of those Oregon wines are like as good almost as French wines.
Well, they're different. They're just different. I mean, people, I don't want to get too wine geeky on you, but people are always comparing.
You can't get too wine geeky.
People are always comparing Pinot Noir from France to Pinot Noir in California, Oregon, or Chardonnay in France and Chardonnay in California, Oregon. They're two different animals. I like them both. It's possible to like them both without comparing them. American's much more robust, much higher in alcohol, fuller in flavor, more opulent in the mouth, and it's much more subtle and laid back in France. Sort of like the cultures. Yeah.
It sounds like the Americans have been Parkerized.
I don't think it's much Parkerized as the weather.
Stephanie, do you know what I mean when I say Parkerized?
No, you explain. David Andy, Parker?
Maybe? I'll explain.
Let Andy explain.
There's a critic called Robert Parker.
Robert Parker.
Very, very influential. And he drinks so much wine. And when you're drinking like 100 glasses of wine a day, the only wines that are going to make an impression on your palate are the very, really robust, opulent, high in alcohol.
Okay.
Lots of fruit.
New World.
New World wines, exactly. So those are the wines he prefers. That's his taste.
And he's an American.
Right. And he gives ratings, and all his ratings of 90, rigged. 95, 100 points up are...
They're absolute. His power is absolute in the wine
world. In
terms
of selling? He can sell
very,
bottles.
Very influential, yes. People, okay. Winemakers now cater to his taste.
Oh, that's
all right, so
yep.
Let's come back to this after a short break on the Mr. Cutlet Show. That's Bruce's best album for my mind. I don't think he ever did anything better than that.
I love it.
Let me just tell you that Bruce Springsteen is actually a wine drinker. I know the guy who supplies his wine to him.
Oh, and, yeah, who?
this guy, Tony Didier.
Okay.
Been in the wine.
What kind does he like?
I don't know what he likes, actually. I never asked him.
Let's find out.
But I know that this guy always goes to his house and brings great wine.
Nice.
Bruce enjoys.
You know, Andy, while we're on the subject of music, this is sort of a little off.
Let me interrupt
topic.
You for 1 second. I just want to let you know that your theme song, as a songwriter,
really,
I appreciate it. Well-crafted song and well-recorded. So,
it's a great
that
song.
That was a guy named Don Ralph, he's a genius, who has a band called Life in a Blender. You can find them on iTunes.
Well, my kudos. As after what I've been in the music business for 35 years, 40 years.
Long time.
Yeah, a long time since I was a little pup.
Now, Andy, you were talking a little bit about some of these wines, particularly like West Coast Pinot Noirs versus French Pinot Noirs and so forth. And I might ask you later to enlarge upon the difference between Old World and New World viniculture. But I have a more, Steffi, I think it would be interesting to ask Andy about what we had our segment that we did before here,
mm-hmm.
was with Kim Severson from The Times, and we were talking about the whole New York versus San Francisco food fight.
It's East Coast, West Coast.
And Kim, being a former Bay Area food writer, obviously, but thought that the San Francisco food is better. But I think that because I know of no man in whom civic pride burns brighter in New York than Andy Chernoff. And I wonder if you want to say something on behalf of New York in the coastal food fight.
This is the thing about New York wine.
No, not wine. Food.
Food.
Yes.
Oh, well, you know, I've been eating a long time, and I have my personal preferences, and it really comes down to I like fresh food, simply prepared.
Oh, well, that's he's going to go to the California.
That's what everyone says.
That's my personal.
You know what?
Simply prepared.
And part of my job right now is we do wine dinners. I work with Jean-Luc Ledoux, who's like the James Beard Award-winning sommelier. I used to work at Danielle. We do wine dinners for collectors. So I'm doing dinners at fancy restaurants all the time, and I appreciate eating food that I can't make in my house. But what I really like to eat is really going to a seaside village in Spain or Italy and getting some fresh fish, just simply prepared, and that is heaven to me.
What's your favorite restaurant in the city?
You know, personally, I like a burger over a steak, and I love Peter Lewis.
A burger on a steak? Wow!
I like a burger over with a layer of cheddar cheese, of American cheese on top.
Cancel the hot dog.
I eat a Peter Luger two or three times a year, and I always have a great time. But I love Shake Shack. That's my favorite.
Love Shake Shack.
So my favorite burger in the city.
You're a real Shake Shack man.
And I love, I have some connections to Pat LaFreda, and I've been lucky enough to get their meat, their burger mix, and cook it in my backyard over a grill. And I make it just, that is heaven to me.
Now, obviously, I agree with you with that, but I want to say something about this.
By the way, you helped me buy my grill and helped me assemble my grill.
I actually helped him assemble. Forget buy. I actually had maybe the only manual labor anyone has ever seen me doing.
That's all you'll ever do. If it's something to make food with, you'll put it together. That's the only time you'll bend over.
The only time I'll bend over. I'll tell you that for sure.
Yes. Uncalloused hands.
But yeah, I feel that we are ceding too much to the Bay Areans.
The Areans?
Yes, the Bay Arean nation. They should not get to have the moral capital of saying that they like unfussy food. I mean, it's like by defining the terms of the debate of people who like food to taste like itself versus like, you know, Rococo freaks that want to pile weird things on top of one another. They've already won the argument before it begins. Every good cook does that. Every good cook does that. That's what every good cook does. Now, my problem in this argument is that I haven't eaten in any of the good restaurants in San Francisco. So I'm at a disadvantage, but I think it's framed artificially in that way. Because no, but the truth is, in San Francisco, I bet there's very few people that are going to put a fig on a plate. And in New York, there's not that many people that are going to do, like, the elaborate molecular freak show that functions as the straw man in this argument so often. Okay, I just wanted to say that.
Well,
am I supposed to respond to that?
Oh, I was just...
I don't know what to say. You just went on a rant?
We both fell asleep.
It was like, yeah, like Cato's 37.
You know. Why aren't we going to talk about wine? I came here to talk about wine.
All right, so...
I want to talk about the pretentiousness that people associate with wine, which is...
Wine snobs.
There's no such thing as an expert in wine. Now,
what do you mean? There's even a certified... You're a certified sommelier.
It's bull... crap.
You can say
anybody bullshit, can, anybody can, it's a easy course. I don't work as a sommelier, but this is the thing. The wine world is so complicated and changes every year. You can only be an expert in a little small section of it. If anybody thinks they're an expert in the whole world, impossible.
Interesting. I often wondered how anyone could know that much. Like,
it's impossible.
It does seem like it would be impossible.
You can be an expert in Bordeaux, but it doesn't mean you know anything about Australian wine. You could be an expert in Burgundy. Burgundy is a lifetime's worth of work. It's so complicated and so dense and so much information and so many separate producers and separate styles. And just two grapes also.
Well, give us an example, Andy. Like, for example, let's say that you wanted to set yourself up as an expert on Burgundian wine. All right, and we're going to have to break briefly. But before we do, can you just give us an idea of, like, what are some of the basic things you would need to know about what do you need to know the names of the different vineyards, or
every vineyard in Burgundy, all the great wines have the name of the vineyard on the label. So you got to know that vineyard, and sometimes the vineyards, a winemaker might have just one row of grapes in Burgundy. So you got to know which winemaker, which vineyard, what year, what process he uses to make his wine, to make a decision about it.
And you got to know that for every year.
For every year, yeah. And vineyards are changing hands often. People are buying new vineyards,
right?
Or they're buying grapes from a farmer.
Oh, it's so complicated.
It is amazingly complicated.
All right, so let's take a break, and let's come back and talk a little bit more about wine and rock and roll with our special guest, Andy Chernoff, on the Mr. Cutlets Show.
It's a real mean team, but we can love. Oh yes, we can love. And my brother's back at home with his Beatles and his Stones. We never got it off on that revolution stuff. What a drag. Too many snacks. Nah, I drunk a lot of wine and I'm feeling fine. Got a race.
You know, it's pretty cool because I almost could have timed it. He says, I drank a lot of wine and I'm feeling fine. And here we have the wine expert with us.
And I love this song. I love that song.
You know, there's also a version where David Bowie sings. He wrote, as you know, Bowie wrote this. Right. And there's a version where he sings it.
He produced the record also.
Now, Stephanie, you were gesticulating wildly during the break.
I was just showing my ignorance regarding wine in general, and I wanted to ask Andy if you could just tell us maybe what the difference between Old World and New World is. Something basic. Is that basic? Is that something that would help me understand better? I drink a lot, but I don't.
You know, first of all, I wouldn't say, don't be ashamed of ignorance, because everybody's ignorant in some part of wine, of the wine world. And I've been in the wine business about 10 years. The growth I've seen in the knowledge of the consumer has been unbelievable.
Oh,
but
yeah?
The question is a good question. New World versus Old World. Old World is obviously Germany, Spain, France, Italy. New World is America, South America, Australia, New Zealand. And the difference is there are sort of basically less rules in.
Okay. So it's not just
in the New World
location.
No, but it's something to do
but it
with
is new. It's location.
Something to do with the way that the vines, like they plant, they use old, like the way that they use the old vines and the new vines. Or something.
No, you have to.
You told me about this.
This is, I don't want to get too complicated.
Get complicated.
But there was a louse called Phylloxera, which destroyed the vineyards of Bordeaux and almost all the world. So you have to graft New World and Old World vines together.
In the Old World.
In the whole world. I don't really get too complicated. It's really
interesting.
I don't even think you think it's interesting. I don't think it's important.
Wasn't there something, Andy, where
it's a technical
question.
No,
but I think it was something that was reflected in the wine. The way you explained it to me one time was that the vines are like can be 100 years old or something, because they just keep, they never prune them or trim them in the old world, like an old earth mother that never shaves her legs or something.
Thank you.
But like, in the New World, they ripped them out and put in new ones, or it's something
no,
like
they
that,
did
right?
that in. You know what? You're talking about a half hour just on that topic. I think it's going to bore everybody.
Fair enough, you know.
I'm going to take charge and go back to Stephanie's question: New World, Old World.
Yes,
New World. There are no rules. The winemaker can do whatever the hell he wants to do.
Okay,
he can use.
It's not like governed by laws like the rest of. Like France.
In France, you cannot irrigate. Okay. You have there's no rain. You cannot irrigate your vineyards.
And this is the wine. This is the Burgundy Consortium or Association. Burgundy.
Well, there are grapes grown all over France and Italy and Spain, and each. In France, it's called the AOC,
okay.
Appellation,
uh-huh.
and the different names in France and Germany and Italy and Spain. But each area has rules mm-hmm. about what grapes you can grow, how you can treat your wines. You cannot irrigate, and because they want to maintain.
They want to even playing.
They want to make no. They want to maintain a specificity of that region. Mm. In other words, Burgundy will only have this kind of this style of wine. In California, grow any grape you want. You could put, if you're drinking Pinot Noir, you're actually drinking probably 25% Syrah with your Pinot Noir. Because the rules are, you got to have 75%.
So it's miscegenated.
To find that word for me. I don't know that word. You got a PhD. I'm like an elementary school dropout.
I don't think that's a word anymore. People in polite society use.
What about in wines? In wines,
I don't think you can have a miscegenated wine.
If I could put it very simply, New World, you got no rules, and Old World, you got rules.
Andy, if someone goes into a wine store, listens to this show, you mentioned a couple of regions of Spain and Southern Italy. Let's say somebody wants to go in and spend. Less than $12 for... No, let's say $10. Less than $10 for a bottle
can
of wine.
You? First of all, can you? For a nice bottle?
You can, but it's very difficult. If you want to spend $50, you got a very good chance of getting a good wine.
What about if you want to spend $15?
There's a lot of crap.
Yeah, what about $15?
Well, no one's... Forget $50. No one wants to spend
this,
that.
This is...
Wine people...
I think like, you're asking the wrong question.
Okay, tell
What's
me
the right question?
The right question is find the wine store you like. Go there, try a lot of wines, figure out what you like. Mm-hmm. Because, for instance, I don't like Bordeaux. I never drink Bordeaux.
Really?
Yeah. And I've had 1982 Bordeaux in front of me, and I got taste, and I go, okay, great. Just does not excite me. Figure out what you like, and then you can explore that particular area or that grape or that region, and you'll have a great, great time. But you might have to buy a few bottles you don't like.
Well,
How much do you think you have to spend if you're not that super knowledgeable? You think you're getting bad wine if you're spending $15?
No, you can get great wine for $10, great wine for $15, for $20. The price range is not important. It's figuring out what you like, and then if you're having a party, you want to spend $10 because you can't really concentrate on
well,
the
that's
subtleties.
Okay. Let me ask you a good question then, because I need while I'm interested in these larger points, I want. Our listeners to get a takeaway from this. If someone's going to buy a big bottle of wine or a box of wine or whatever to feed like a people that aren't paying attention, what would you recommend for a mass consumption wine?
I think south of France, south of Spain. You go to New Zealand.
What would be an example of some wines?
Of a particular...
Like we said, Côte d'Aron or what are these southern...
Actually, Côte d'Aron, you can get some very good buys. In Languedoc, on the Mediterranean coast, in Tarusio.
You get a big bottle, or you get little.
No, don't get
little
the big
bottles.
Bottle. Get the regular bottle.
Regular
bottle. It's usually
okay.
If you're getting a box, it's usually bulk wine.
Box. Avoid the box.
Avoid the box. There are some people.
There
now,
are some nice ones now.
They're starting to make some better wines, yeah. But you got to have go to find a good wine store.
It's all it's
what you trust.
Right.
The
relationship.
Yeah, exactly. Develop a relationship. Experiment a little bit. Find out what you like.
Now, do we have time?
Most important thing is you got to know what kind of wine you enjoy to drink.
Now, I'm getting the sign that this segment's going to be up, and with it, this episode of the show. So I'm hoping that Andy, before he goes, can tell us. You know, Andy, the Clash opened up for the Dictators.
No.
Is that right?
No. AC/DC.
Oh, AC/DC opened up for the Dictators.
But their first show in New York.
But,
wow.
Also, Andy.
That's impressive.
Andy went to England and performed just when the Sex Pistols came out and everything. And I wonder if you could tell us your opinion about Johnny Rotten and Sid Vicious based on your firsthand experience as a punk rocker
Sid Vicious
in the 70s.
Is the biggest jerk on the planet. anybody who thinks he's a hero should be. The guy was a junkie. He was a loser. He had no personality of his own. He was a follower. Johnny Rotten was a smart guy. However, about 2 or 3 years ago, I saw the Sex Pistols on Jay Leno. And I haven't really listened to the Sex Pistols since. He was dressed up like a clown. He was like 300 pounds. It was a joke. They lost all credibility in my eyes.
Did you know the girlfriend?
Oh, Nancy Spungen?
Yeah.
What does that laugh mean, Andy?
She was as weak and as Sid Vicious. You know, she was actually from Philadelphia. Came to New York. She was like a hooker, a prostitute. Who knows what the hell? She was just a topless dancer. Goes to England. She's there for 3 months. And she's speaking with an English accent. It was just trying to, you know, these were people that didn't have strong personalities. Just trying to fit in any way they could.
Isn't it strange that even that early on in that movement, it, you know what I mean, like, it already had become riddled with ciphers, whereas it should have been entirely personality, like personalities like Andy or like Joey Ramone.
Yeah, but
or
Sid
whatever.
Vicious was a personality.
Well, Sid Vicious. Oh, you just said he was. Sid
I'm
Vicious
saying I think he
Rotten.
Had a I think he had a horrible personality.
But he had one.
But he had a personality. He was, you know, he was a junkie. These people were on drugs. It was sad.
Well, a lot of great musicians are junkies and on drugs, but they...
But they got talent. Sid Vicious had no talent.
No talent. Well, Steffi...
Joshy.
On that note, I guess we're going to have to wrap up the show, although I have to say I found this one to be exceptionally enjoyable.
You say that about each one, though. You
know I know. Well, I do find them all exceptionally
That's because
you're so ingratiating,
you talking.
Josh.
It's you talking for... Uninterrupted.
Andy, first of all, you interrupt me all the time.
Me?
Second of all...
Me?
You just interrupted me there, just to take an example. All right, anyway...
I love when you two
We
fight.
Were brought by A6... This was funded by A16, which is as good or better now that that little guy left. And we're here at Roberta's, which is one of my fourth favorite Italian restaurant, practically. And which for me and like my fourth favorite restaurant, I love it. It's one of my 10 favorite
practically
restaurants. And we're on the Heritage Radio Network, and it's the Mr. Cutlets Show.
Mr. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop, with the chicken and the brisket and the